Good afternoon, I'm Linda Dow. On today's In Focus, we're talking about bees and the important role they play in our food chain. The United Nations proclaims May 20th as World Bee Day in order to raise awareness of these essential pollinators. Joining us is local bee breeder and member of the Lanark County Beekeepers Association, Johnny D'Amatos. Hi, Johnny.
G'day, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are things out there on the bee farm?
They're doing good. We were just moving some young queens around, so it's been a good day. We got a nice break in the weather.
Yes, did this last few days of a cold snap at night particularly, did it affect the bees in any way?
Like everyone, it slightly dampened our operation a little bit, but nothing too crazy. We were able to bounce back pretty quick.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks for speaking with us today, you know, because tomorrow is actually World Bee Day, and, you know, so perfect timing that you're on today with us, Johnny. So I'm just wondering, you know, are we needing more education about bees? I mean, how much does the average person know about bees and how important they are? What do you think?
I think over the years, and unfortunately it's been, I think, mainly due to bad news, the public's been more and more aware of declining bee numbers and just the difficulty our industry has. But definitely the bee awareness is always good. There's, you know, like every industry, there's some parts of the business of bees that a lot of people aren't necessarily aware of. So it's, yeah, I think more education is always a good thing on the side of beekeeping.
You know, we spoke last spring, you and I, about what's involved in beekeeping, and today I'd like to focus on the work you've been doing with other bee breeders that will help to protect our bee population. But first, can you talk a bit about the importance of bees as pollinators and also their role in our food chain?
Yeah, definitely. So, honeybees and pollinators as a whole, they're responsible for essentially any kind of colorful vegetable or fruit you can think of typically is involved in pollination. So all your fruits, you know, they come about from bee pollination. A lot of vegetable crops, squashes, all that all comes, that's all thanks to honeybees. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, like the farmers are playing a role growing the crop and supporting the crop through its growth, but bees play a vital step in the process of that food getting to everyone's plates. So, yeah, that's kind of the big role that bees play with pollination. The more they visit certain crops, the flowers, the bigger the crop can be, the healthier the crop. So it's, yeah, definitely a win-win for the public and for the farmers growing the crops.
Amazing. And, you know, are they also important for grain crops as well as fruit trees?
Well, they can, especially when you're looking at oilseed production, like canola, they can play a vital role in increasing seed yield. But when it comes to grain, corns, a lot of those plants are air pollinated, so they don't necessarily require the bees. But the other crops, and as I said, oil seeds, definitely.
Right. So just to make it clear, there's a distinction between bees, right? I mean, there's wild bees, and then there's honeybees that are raised domestically, correct?
Correct, yeah. Kind of like we touched on last year, honeybees are they're livestock in Canada. They're not native to Canada. And they're managed bee species, which makes it convenient for the agricultural community because we can utilize pollinators. We actually have access and we can control where they are and how many numbers. So it makes it a very useful, honeybees a very useful tool for the agricultural community. But that being said, native pollinators also play a vital role. Anything the honeybee will miss, a native pollinator will pick up the slack.
Oh, that's
so
great.
They are definitely just as important.
So we should be thinking of bees in a more friendly way, do you think, instead of swatting them away and worrying about being stung? We should embrace them a little bit more, should we?
Well, exactly. And, you know, the analogy we always use is, you know, people won't hesitate to quickly pet a random dog on the street.
Right.
But they can cause a lot more damage than a little bee can. So we have to, I think it's just something that's been ingrained into our minds, just this fear of being stung. But at the end of the day, it's more of an inconvenience, less damage causing, so to speak.
Right. Johnny, what are some of the biggest threats to the health and survival of bee populations?
Yeah, so to this day, and it's a bit of a broken record, but we're hoping to change that. But the biggest threat to honeybees right now is the varroa mite. So it's a mite that was spread across the world in the early 90s and hit Canada in the mid 90s. And it's just devastating bee populations. It's attributed to most of our winter losses can all be brought back to these mites. They're just they're an all around bad news for the honeybees.
How does this? Is it a varroa? Did you say varroa?
Yeah. So the varroa mite.
What does it do? How does it affect the bee?
Yeah. So the varroa mite feeds on the fat bodies of the bee. Think of like a mosquito stuck to a bee. Mm-hmm. But the fat bodies in honeybees are responsible for their immune system.
Okay.
So this mite is feeding on the bee, sucking out essentially its immune system. And to make matters worse, going into winter time, you know, think a bear going into hibernation, honeybees need to be fat, ready to go. And if they've been heavily parasitized by these mites, they're just going to go into winter skinny and have a much less chance of surviving come springtime. So, and kind of the third nail in the coffin is that it is a parasite. So much like ticks and mosquitoes, it has, it carries vectors. So the mite not only is weakening their immune system, but it also spreads viruses to the honeybee colonies. So, just all-around bad news.
Yes, for sure. Are there any other problems? Are there any other threats to the bees right now other than this particular mite?
Well, the changing climate is always a struggle in agriculture and in beekeeping. It's, you know, we're always trying to adapt to either longer growing season or sporadic weather. So climate definitely plays a major role. There's other terrifying threats on the horizon that haven't entered North America or Europe yet, but where the industry is keeping an eye on it.
Well, we won't talk about those today, right?
Yeah.
Let's take one thing at a time.
Exactly.
The work you're doing now with fellow bee breeders, how significant are your research findings, and is this groundbreaking news?
Yeah, it's actually extremely exciting. So, as you know, I'm involved in the Ontario Resistant Honeybee Selection Program, or ORBS for short. And the ORBS program has been around around since mid-90s, and it was started to confront the problem of tracheal mites that was affecting bees at that time, so a different type of mite. And through the hard work of bee breeders in Ontario, the Ministry of Agriculture supporting them, and the provincial associations lending out their tech transfer teams, they were able to essentially, I won't say eradicate, but we don't have issues with tracheal mites in Canada anymore, thanks to the work of this program. But they didn't rest on their laurels. They moved on to breeding bees that were resistant to, like hygienic bees, which are resistant to brood diseases, so more diseases they became resistant to. And now we've decided to kind of turn our gaze to varroa mites, and is there a way for us to breed bees that are resistant to these mites? And recently being about a year and a half, 2 years ago, the University of Guelph's Honeybee Research Center devised a way for bee breeders to measure how resistant bees are to these mites, so the low varroa growth, we call it, or LVG. And yeah, it's the first of its kind. It was created right here in Ontario, and it's an easy tool for us bee breeders to implement. And we start showing results within 2 years of breeding. So it's really fantastic, and it's going to make hopefully a huge, huge impact on the industry. So it's extremely exciting news, because you don't usually hear too much good news associated with honeybees when we're touching the news. It's always massive colony death or...
Right. Well, that sounds like good news for sure.
Yeah.
Because we definitely need these critters around, don't we? We'll be in
trouble.
We'll be in big trouble if they're not. Now, you say that you're breeding these bees to be resistant to this particular mite.
Yep.
In what way would that show itself? I mean, so the mite is there in the hive or on the bee, and then what happens?
Yeah, so, and this is the exciting part. It's that this technique that the University of Guelph developed, it doesn't just pick one trait. It breeds for a multitude of traits, which is great, because at the end of the day, it's pretty difficult if you're just breeding for one thing, but this allows us to breed for a multitude of traits. So some of the traits that are being bred into the bees, the bee is able to smell the mite underneath the cappings.
Okay.
So while the mite is reproducing, hidden in the beeswax, with the baby bees, they're able to smell them, cut open the cell, pull out the mite, and then tuck the baby bee back into bed, so to speak. So none the wiser. The bees also are able to groom the mites off of them. So they take a break from all their hard work to stretch out and just kind of brush themselves off, and they'll knock the mites off of them. And then the other is we call like a mite biter. And the bee, if it sees a mite or senses a mite, it'll jump onto it and just chew that mite up. So,
well, my goodness. Is that something that you would only see looking closely or under a microscope or something? Or is this something that you could observe if you were somehow looking in the hive or whatever?
Yeah, so the chair of the ORBS program, he actually caught on video a bee actually attacking. He just, for fun, he just put, just to see what would happen, he put a mite on a knife. Because you can see it all with the naked eye. And he put it up to the bee, and the bee, you saw it kind of twitch. It saw the mite and just jumped on it like, a very unlike a bee. You know, we always see our bees as these little vegetarians, but evidently not today.
You know, there's a whole lot going on out there in the bee world, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. We're always trying to innovate. And much like all industries, there's a lot more to it than, just the delicious honey that we get after.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You'll have to do a documentary on this. The behavior
definitely.
Of bees up there at Matos Apiary.
Yes.
We're waiting for it. That'll be the next thing coming from you.
Yeah, that'll be the next big the next big step. But no, it is really, really exciting, because at the end of the day, this is a problem that's been plaguing the industry relentlessly for the last, 30 years, let's say. And we haven't, it always feels like we're running in circles. We're never truly finding a solution. So this is actually a solution that might be it. So it's really, really exciting.
That's great. You know, you're going to be talking people into wanting to be beekeepers and bee breeders if you keep sounding like it's a lot of fun, like you are.
Oh yeah. Well, when you love what you do, it does make the job definitely a little bit easier.
Fantastic. You say that there's a social aspect to what you do. Could you explain that? We've got a couple of minutes left.
Yeah. So beekeeping, like, our bees are social insects. They all work together, and they work together with the environment. And beekeepers as well, working, we work stronger and better when we work within agriculture. So, for instance, there's partnerships in beekeeping that, most people, when they think beekeeping, wouldn't come to mind. For instance, dairy farmers. Dairy farmers are some of our best friends as beekeepers. They grow alfalfa for their cattle. And, you know, alfalfa is one of the best blooming crops for honey. Same with canola farmers. It's a, you know, it's an oil feed, but canola, it's, you know, if anyone's ever seen it, it's, you know, acres of beautiful yellow flowers blooming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, definitely a stellar honey crop, and it benefits the farmers. They get a better yield on their canola. So there's all these relationships with, because more than just the stereotypical apple orchard, there are other relationships that beekeepers can have with other members of the agricultural community. So okay. It is rather fantastic, everyone working together like this.
Right, and that's something that we really don't think about when we think about beekeepers. But anyway, I'm just wondering what we can do as citizens to help protect bees in our own small way. You know, is there anything special we can grow, for instance?
Yes, so we can definitely planting flowering plants to help the native pollinators, because at the end of the day, the beekeepers are working hard with their honeybees, but there isn't a, so to speak, a native bee beekeeper mm-hmm. that's working with the native bees. So definitely, you know, planting more flowering plants, putting out those little bee houses, they do help. It may take a little while for them to establish themselves.
Little bee houses? What do they look like?
It's just a little wooden house full of nesting tubes. Oh. Pretty much everyone's selling them nowadays.
Really?
So, yeah,
okay.
So it's just a little, you know, a helpmate for the mm-hmm. for the native pollinators. And as for honeybees, supporting initiatives like the ones we're taking part in are always fantastic. So, you know, supporting the Honeybee Research Center in Guelph or the Ontario Resistant Honeybee Selection Program
okay.
is always a great start, because you know, that's where the actual research happens, and then mm-hmm. it's distilled down to us simple beekeepers.
So how can we help support, you know, the research that's going on right now then?
Yeah, so donations can be made to the Honeybee Research Center.
In Guelph?
They also offer, if people are interested in programs, they offer programs. The province offers programs to teach people beekeeping to see if it's something that you'd want to get into. So that's always a way to help. And the Ontario Resistant Honeybee Selection Program, same thing. They're always open to donations, because it's all grassroots when it comes to
right,
beekeeping.
Right.
So,
Johnny,
yeah.
And for more information, our listeners can go to the Lanark County Beekeepers Association, right, to find out more
yep.
information in general?
Exactly. Yep.
Great.
We always we have meetings every four times throughout the year, so they can feel free. And we always have a bee day that's open to the general public. And it always happens in August, so if you just keep an ear out,
mm-hmm.
the dates will be released, and yeah, you can meet with these members of the community.
Oh, that's great, Johnny. We're out of time now, and I want to thank you very much for this. And,
no worries. Thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations, by the way, on the success of your research. This is wonderful news.
Yeah, thank you, and yeah, it's really exciting. So. Hopefully it can keep moving forward. Hopefully it's good news from here on in.
Great. Thanks so much, and have a great summer, Johnny.
All right, you too. Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My guest, Johnny D'Amatos, is a local beekeeper and commercial bee breeder of queen bees at Matos Apiary. I'm Linda Dow. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.